From Erie to Jeffersonville, Latrobe to Selins Grove, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, it's called the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and it will mean higher utility bills for all Pennsylvanians. We have team coverage of the scheme, beginning with Greg Wrightstone, author of the book Inconvenient Facts, who looks at the science of so-called climate change. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi of the Allegheny Institute take a deep dive into the policy implications of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative on this week's Allegheny Institute Report. And Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary on how the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative puts an emphasis on flawed government regulation rather than on innovation and technological advancement. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Greg Wrightstone in just a couple of minutes, but first, here are news headlines from patownhall.com. Amid angst over rising student debt, enrollment at Pennsylvania's 14 state-owned universities has dropped again this year, marking the ninth straight year of enrollment declines. Enrollment is down 2.6% from last year. It's fallen 20% since peaking in 2010. Despite the almost decade-long drop in enrollment, the schools have continued to expand buildings and otherwise add to the cost of tuition, which makes up three-quarters of their revenue. Officials at the state system of higher education blame a shrinking pool of potential students for the decline in enrollment. A new estimate published by the U.S. Geological Survey reports the recoverable amount of natural gas in the Utica and Marcellus Shale plays is significantly higher than initially thought. The natural gas industry has revitalized the economy in many parts of Pennsylvania. Due to advancements in drilling techniques and technology to estimate the amount of natural gas, the survey now says the two shale plays contain over 214 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. A majority of folks who turned out for Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman's so-called listening tour on the potential legalization of recreational marijuana supported such a move, but a poll of actual voters by Fox 43 and the Susquehanna Polling and Research Company found 48% of voters oppose legalization, while only 37% support such a move. Governor Tom Wolf has announced his support for legalization, but Republican legislative leaders are opposed, which essentially kills any chance for a legalization bill to move forward in this legislative session. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Governor Tom Wolf is attempting by executive order to embroil Pennsylvania in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGGI. This in an effort to combat perceived climate change. Not only will REGGI raise energy bills for all Pennsylvanians, but is it really a solution in search of a problem? To learn more, we turn to Greg Wrightstone. Greg is author of the best-selling book, Inconvenient Facts, The Science Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. Greg, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Greg, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, this is one of those things. The left is really good about giving nice-sounding names to their policies, but then when you get to the policies, not so much. So before we get into discussing the pros and cons, mostly cons to this initiative, what is the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative?
Yeah, it's a conglomeration of, right now it's 10 Northeast states. Pennsylvania is looking to join those. What they've done is establish a market, if you will, where electricity providers, and this Regional Greenhouse Initiative, it doesn't have to do with transportation or home emissions. It has to do with electricity generation CO2 emissions is what they're trying to control with this. And so what the program does here is establish this market through which each of these electricity providers. It would be coal and natural gas in our state, not nuclear, because, of course, nuclear really doesn't provide any greenhouse gas emissions. So these electricity providers would have to go and purchase what are called emission allowances that would offset their CO2 emissions. Right now, Pennsylvania is emitting about 82 million, at least by 2016, the best I could find latest data, emitted about 82 million tons of CO2 from these sectors. The current cost to buy from the market is $5.20 a ton. So these electricity emitters, the coal-fired plants, the natural gas-fired electricity generation sources, that would generate, well, actually, it would cost them about $400 million, which is in line with what Governor Wolf in his proposal, he indicated that the state would receive somewhere between $280 and $400 million of revenue from the purchase of these allowances. So what you have here are electricity providers paying the government of Pennsylvania or some entity that's to be set up yet, $400 million, $300 million, whatever it is. And those costs are not going to be eaten by the companies, but rather passed on to the consumers. So what that does then is drive up the cost for electricity generation by coal and natural gas-fired electricity generation source. And that, in turn, makes wind and solar and nuclear more competitive. And that's the goal, really, is to make fossil fuel-fired electricity generation much more expensive so the other sources can compete against it. In your lead-up, you're right. It's painful. It's onerous. Increased electricity costs is not going to do anybody any good except those receiving the beneficiaries from the money, and that would be probably increased subsidies for wind and solar. Most of that money they get will probably go to increased transportation and public transportation in Philadelphia, Harrisburg, and Pittsburgh. I think it's going to mainly, you can view it as a great transfer of wealth from counties like Elk County and Indiana County and Greene County to the metropolitan areas of Pennsylvania.
Let's break this down a little further here, Greg, because you've said a lot in that answer. And my first question to you is, this $300, $400 million in revenue, this sounds like a tax that's being added. So how can the governor just unilaterally bind Pennsylvania to an agreement that is essentially going to be placing yet another tax on power generators, those that use fossil fuel?
Well, from what I can read, and I'm not a lawyer, and I don't even play one on the radio, but from what I can read, they're going to do this under they believe they have a constitutional mandate for clean air and clean water. So this would be under the auspices of the Department of Environmental Protection, just another protection to protect the people and provide the clean air and clean water that our Constitution says we have to provide. Sure sounds like, from what I can read, a lot of people are saying that they don't need legislative approval and that the legislature does not have veto power. It will have to go through a review process for comments, from my understanding. But again, it could well be that this is a thing that could be inactive without legislative approval. But that's time. Time will tell. Maybe go to the Supreme Court of the state, and we know how that's worked out for those of us that believe in constitutional limitations of government. It hasn't worked out too well.
We are talking with Greg Wrightstone, who is author of Inconvenient Facts, and today we're talking about the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. This is an agreement that Governor Tom Wolf is unilaterally imposing on Pennsylvania, as we've been discussing, attempting to bypass the General Assembly, which, Greg, I have to say, in recent years has not been very good at standing up for its own powers against this governor. But let's also then explore the whole premise of this, and that is that we have CO2 emissions that are damaging to the environment, are causing so-called climate change. Is this whole premise actually even accurate? Is this really a solution in search of a problem?
Hey, that's my line. You're right. You're allowed to borrow it because I like it a lot. Yeah, it is a solution in search of a problem. For the one thing, let's just take a look. The governor in his rollout, he looked at 2018 flooding and said, this is being caused by global warming. And I've taken a look at that. And 2018 it was record level of precipitation since they started keeping records back in the early 1900s. That is a fact. But I took a look at looking at the NOAA data, National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration data to look at the biggest storms. And those peaked in the 40s and 50s with a significant decline since. 2018 appears to be an anomaly if we look at precipitation. So he's just wrong about this increase in precipitation. And then he also talks about heat waves, which we know in Pennsylvania, the really, really worst of the heat waves occurred in the decade of the 30s, the Dust Bowl era. And it was, I mean, it's not even close. The other thing we look at is what is the goal of this proposal? The goal is to change the temperature of the Earth. They want to do it by decreasing greenhouse gas emissions. If we did do this and we imposed this regulation and we got rid of 100% of the greenhouse gas CO2 emissions from electricity generation, what would that do to future temperature? So I actually looked at data source, and this goes back to the National Center for Atmospheric Research. I took their database and their formula for calculating future warming from greenhouse gases, and I took a look at what that would mean, and it would change if we reduced 100% of electricity's CO2 emissions. It would avert, now you ready for this, 1/1000th of 1 degree Fahrenheit by the year 2050. That's it. 1/1000th of 1 degree Fahrenheit by the year 2050 is what would be averted. So I'll ask you, Loman, how many jobs is that worth? How many jobs lost is that worth?
Well, from my point of view, it would be none, but
right. Right. You would be right. And this is such, it's too small to even measure. And this is what they're trying to do. This is their goal. They want to decrease temperature by 1/1000th of 1 degree Fahrenheit in 30 years. Well, come on, man. This is, it's crazy. And they haven't even looked at, how are we going to replace this? They're going to replace with what, wind and solar? We already saw last year that the Pennsylvania Game Commission, and bear in mind that the Pennsylvania Game Commission controls about 25% of the land that has potential industrial scale wind development. The Pennsylvania Game Commission voted unanimously to ban any wind projects because they thought it was too dangerous and impacted endangered species, and it was too dangerous for people to be around, and they banned it.
We have been talking with Greg Wrightstone. He is author of the book Inconvenient Facts. There's also a smartphone app. So, Greg, tell us a bit about the app, the book, and where folks can go to get both.
Yeah, the book is, and actually, Loman, it was just in the last week, it was the number one bestseller on Amazon in three categories. So this was, it's been incredible. People are loving it. You can go to inconvenientfacts.xyz. You can click there. You can get $5 off. And the smartphone app is awesome. You can go to the App Store, Google Play Store, and just type in Inconvenient Facts. We're approaching 50,000 downloads of that.
The book is Inconvenient Facts, The Science Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. Greg Wrightstone has been with us. He is the author. You're going to want to check out the book, Inconvenient Facts, also the smartphone app. Greg, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you, Loman.
Is another big government program really going to cut greenhouse gas emissions or simply raise costs for consumers without any concrete benefits to the environment? Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi take a deep dive into the policy implications on this Allegheny Institute Report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is Frank Gamrat, the executive director of the Allegheny Institute. Frank, we've heard something kind of new here in Pennsylvania. It's something called the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and it's a mouthful.
Its friends call it Reggie.
We'll pretend that we're friends today, and we'll say the Reggie. Could you give our listeners some background on what the Reggie is?
The Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or Reggie, is the first mandated, I hate to use the word marketplace because it's really not market-driven at all, but there are 9 states in the Northeast that have joined this consortium whose goal is to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide emissions from electricity-generating plants. That's the short end of it. If you have a plant, you generate electricity of 25 megawatts or more, they're going to be looking at you to reduce your carbon dioxide emissions. Now, the nine states are, they're all mostly New England states. It's Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Connecticut, Delaware, New York, Maryland, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and New Jersey was in for a while till about 2011-12, and then they got out, and then they're supposed to come back in 2020. And of course, the missing piece in all this was Pennsylvania. And recently, a couple weeks ago, Governor Wolf has decided that he wants to join REGI, and he has asked the appropriate department, I think it's the Environmental Protection Department, to look into this and to draft up things that he can do by executive order. Now, that being said, there's going to be a really nasty fight over this because the legislature, which is Republican-controlled, is not really enthralled with this program, and so they may want to sue and stop him from doing this without their consent.
So it might be something that the courts get involved mm-hmm. with, because the way right. I understood it is that, yeah, there was an executive order signed, but is this something that should go through the mm-hmm. legislative process? And, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
I guess then, like, as you pointed out, could be it's some kind of pitched battle here where the mm-hmm. courts may have to enter the fray and say, okay, well, here's the, you know, right. the gubernatorial powers and here's the legislative mm-hmm. powers and then some kind of settlement from there. Mm-hmm. So basically, up until now, I mean, is the REGI something that's old? Has it been around for a long time? Mm-hmm. You mentioned the nine states that are in it, they joined mm-hmm. and then New Jersey left and now it's coming back in next right. year. I mean, has this thing been around for 10. A long time?
Since 2009. This came about in 2009 with, we now have this movement on climate change and everyone's trying to scramble and a lot of folks think it's the worst catastrophe that we've ever faced. And, you know, whether you believe it or not is a totally separate debate for another time. But what it's trying to do is control carbon dioxide emissions from electricity generating plants. Now, why is that important? Well, they're going to try to make the plants change. And when they make those changes, the end result is going to be an increase in the price of electricity. And that's why it's worrisome for us here in Pennsylvania, and for those of us like the Institute who do public policy analysis, what will the effect be on the citizens of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania? And so let's get back into a little bit of the nuts and bolts of REGI without boring too many people. There's a couple of features of this program. There's a three-year compliance period where they'll look at the 3 years of emissions from the state and say, okay, here's how much you're emitting and on average, and this is what, you know, we're going to set your cap to be. Another one is there's emissions auctions. So let's say a plant knows that they're having a hard time coming into compliance. They can go to a secondary market and buy allowances that would let them emit more than what they're supposed to be able to do. And another one is a cost containment procedure, and that, of course, is to set floors on prices for these allowances so that allegedly they can't get too out of hand, but more likely to control the price of allowances to make them probably out of the reach of a lot of electric plants so that they can use that as another way to lower the cap. Now, each one of these things goes into place, it's going to have an effect on these power plants. Well, we looked at the RGGI Incorporated, which is the group that runs the program, and they put out some pretty interesting statistics. And in 2009, you know, they set the cap at 188 million metric tons of carbon dioxide. And the funny thing is that the actual emissions were so much lower. They're 44% below that emission. So they're setting a cap that no one needs to worry about because the actual emissions are already under four of these REGI states. And that time, Pennsylvania was not, of course, included. So they ended up lowering the cap again. And funny thing is, of course, that the actual emissions were below that cap. So they finally set it back in 2016 to where now the states are only 8% instead of 44% below the cap. So they keep lowering the cap, but emissions keep falling. And so the question is, well, why do we really need REGI if emissions are falling? And there's two things going on here. One, of course, is the technological advances that's going on. But two, especially in Pennsylvania, the switch from coal to natural gas. Hmm. And the natural gas just burns cleaner and better. So a lot of electric plants in the Commonwealth are switching to this cleaner burning fuel. One of the things, you know, Pennsylvania is not a member of REGI. As of we speak right now, October 2019, not a member of REGI. Since 2000, from 2000 to 2016, Pennsylvania's carbon dioxide emissions have fallen by 26%. So without them, we've been able to have a nice reduction. And a lot of it, again, is because of the switch to natural gas, which, as everyone knows, we've got a very healthy natural gas industry in the Marcellus Shale and the Utica Shale, and we seem to be moving nicely without having anyone stand over top of us and say, hey, you need to do this.
Yeah, and that seems like that's a fairly good argument to make to the proponents. They're saying that the state should join this consortium or this multi-state compact. I guess also, I don't know if you know this answer, but I mean, how would the interplay be with like the Public Utility Commission? Like if the
A really good question, and you know, I can tell you this. I can tell you that there was a study from the Cato Institute at Washington, D.C., that looked at electric rates for the 9 RGGI states and noticed that compared to a sample of 5 states that he used that were non-RGGI states, and that was Illinois, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Oregon, the electric rates in the RGGI states were 64% higher than the rates in those 5 control states. So if you enter RGGI, one thing is for sure is you're going to see higher electric rates. Now, how does this then factor over into the economy? Well, if you have an electric intensive industry, think manufacturing, you're going to see a reduction. Now, this same Cato paper said that energy intensive industries such as primary metals, food processing, paper products, petroleum refining, and chemical industries actually lost 35% in the number of firms that they have compared to the non-RGGI states, of which Pennsylvania was one in the sample. And they also took a 13% decrease in the overall goods production sector. So you were seeing a reduction in economic activity because of the increase in energy. Firms are going to go where they're welcome, and if the cost of energy is higher, they're going to go somewhere else. So that is certainly something to think about.
Frank, that's interesting stuff, and as always, our listeners can visit our website, which is www.alleghenyinstitute.org. You can follow us on Twitter, and you can read about the RGGI, as we say, for Frank Gamrat. This is Eric Montardi. This has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
CO2 emissions are already falling, and it has nothing to do with government regulation and everything to do with technological innovation. So says Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
On October 3rd, Governor Wolf took executive action directing the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection to join the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or RGGI. In the press release, the governor noted, "Given the urgency of the climate crisis facing Pennsylvania and the entire planet, the Commonwealth must continue to take concrete, economically sound, and immediate steps to reduce emissions." Over the next few minutes, we'll explore some facts and figures that prove the carbon tax is neither economically sound, nor will it serve to achieve the governor's objective of reducing carbon emissions. The program's stated goal is to reduce power plants' CO2 emissions, but as we will see, it is more accurately described as a revenue raiser with little accountability and no measurable impacts on emissions. Currently, 9 states participate in RGGI. How does it work? Participating states set an annual cap of CO2 emissions in the power sector, and all power plants that generate 25 megawatts of electricity or more are required to purchase allowances or credits to emit CO2 above their annual cap. The cost of these credits eventually shows up on the electric bills of businesses and families who end up paying more for electricity each and every month. Joining RGGI is not a smart decision for our state. Consider that 11.65% of the total economic output in Pennsylvania comes from manufacturing, and this sector employs 9.47% of the state's workforce. Higher energy prices would make PA a less competitive place to invest in manufacturing, especially energy-intensive manufacturing. Furthermore, supporters of RGGI claim that emissions reductions in participating states can be attributed to the program, when in reality they are part of a broader national trend that was driven by technological innovation. The International Energy Agency recognized in 2013 that the decline in energy-related CO2 emissions in the U.S. in recent years has been one of the bright spots in the global picture. One of the key reasons had been that the increased availability of natural gas. All in all, between 2005 and 2015, U.S. CO2 emissions related to the energy sector declined by 12%. Furthermore, according to Professor David Victor from the University of California at San Diego, the impact of the switch from coal to natural gas on U.S. emissions each year was equal to about 2 times the total effect of the Kyoto Protocol on carbon emissions in the rest of the world, including the European Union. REGI is not effective in reducing emissions, and that is why proponents of the program never mention leakage. Leakage occurs when an emissions reduction program does not include all sources contributing to the overall emission pot. In other words, increases in emissions from uncovered sources in REGI states or in neighboring states may offset the emission reductions achieved from covered sources. Between 2007 and 2015, the REGI states doubled their imports, with much of the imported power coming from the PJM transmission region. So while supporters might claim emissions reductions as a result of the cap and tax program, the reality is far more complex, and it is likely to be the case that those were not actual reductions, but rather the program simply shifted REGI state emissions to other states in the region. Like everyone else, we want a cleaner, healthier planet, and we do not think blanket government policies are going to get us there. We should be investing in permitting experimentation for innovative groups that are seeking solutions. Better technology will bring more efficient, sustainable methods of energy consumption. To find us on Facebook, search at PAAFP, and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director for Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WJSA-FM in Jersey Shore, WCCL-FM, and WBHV-AM in Johnstown, along with WTYM-AM in Katanning, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.